The regular May meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Please rise and join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for...
Three directors present, so we do have a quorum. District Council is not here, so we won't have a report from closed session. Are there any additions, deletions to the agenda or pulled consent calendar items?
I'm not aware of any.
Does anyone in the audience want a consent calendar item pulled? Apparently not. The agenda stands as printed. Let the record show that Director Funky Blue has arrived. And we'll go back to District Council Art Montandon for a report from closed session.
We had no action items to report out of the last closed session of the board.
Thank you.
Other than the fight that Mr. Funky Blue and I were in.
Was it serious?
I'll let you figure out who won.
Okay. We had planned on having a presentation of a proclamation this morning to Tim Windsor, but I don't believe he's here. So we will continue that matter for 1 month until the June regular meeting. We're on to special reports. Is there a report from the Sheriff's Department today? Apparently not. I hope they're out busting crime. Tammy, is Bob Grussens here yet?
Yes, he was just putting together the last part of his presentation, so maybe we can skip him until he gets here.
We will do that. Before we go on, let me explain to those of you who are here today and those who will be seeing the meeting on tape to take a break and allow the staff to attend to that conference call, then come back and reconvene. And for those of you who haven't guessed what the subject of the conference call is, it's the Pine Knolls water tanks. So that will give you an indication that there's continuing dialogue with the Coastal Commission, which I think is a good thing. We will proceed to managers and board reports, and we'll begin with the general manager's report.
And mine's brief. I just want to remind the community that our offices will be closed on Monday in observation of Memorial Day. However, our 24-hour answering service will be available by calling 927-6233 to report any problems or concerns. Let's see. We had the Cambria Forest Management Plan on last month's agenda. I just made a note in my report that Fire Chief Bob Putney, who was unable to attend today, he does have Fire Captain Bill Hollingsworth in his place. However, we want to bring that back next month. We are working on the plan and how to implement it and some ideas. I just didn't want to infer that we skipped it. So I included that as part of my report. Chief Putney and I have also interviewed a final candidate for the assistant fire chief. He accepted this week, and we'll make an announcement at the next meeting and let you know when he's going to be able to start. We did get our retirement notice from Joyce Hannum, who is our permits and conservation specialist. She'll be retiring in August, so we're busy in the administration office working out the transitions and some potential in-house promotional opportunities this affords us. And then for Parks and Recreation, I just highlighted that at the May 11th absent today about the potential. I'm sure the community is interested in the activity regarding surcharges. We don't anticipate at this time that it's going to be necessary to recommend to the board to consider imposing water surcharges, which is probably when we brought it back to you last year about this time. So we at least want to make that announcement that as long as the community continues to observe conservation efforts, that we have probably plenty of water to get us through the summer months. We will be keeping an eye on it, and we will report back as necessary. And then Jim might have some additional comments when it gets to Brian's report. And that's all.
Thank you. Any questions of the general manager? We'll proceed next to the fire chief's report. Captain Hollingsworth.
William Hollingsworth, Captain of Cambria Fire Department.
Your microphone.
I don't believe it's on.
There we go.
William Hollingsworth, captain with Cambria Fire Department, acting instead of Fire Chief Putney, who is absent today. You have his staff report in front of you. He wanted me to highlight three specific things, first being the fire hazard fuel reduction program has been implemented. All the people that have unapproved properties within the district have been notified of the requirement to clear those parcels. That has to be done by July 15th, and we are reminding all the property owners to notify the fire department that that has to be done. If it has not been completed, that will be going to contract, which we deal with every year around this time. Secondly, we have our next CERT community, Cambria Community Emergency Response Team training that is going to be taking place in June. We already have over 80 people qualified in this capacity in the community, and duty that day, if you have any specific questions in that regard, I'd be happy to address them. And if you have any other questions, I can do that as well.
We can get to the gallonage lost in the incident you referred to under the utility manager's report. Any questions of Captain Hollingsworth?
Yes, Mr. President. Captain, I noticed that we've got a real bumper crop of Scotch broom in town. What's your reaction to that stuff? Is it really dangerous?
It is quite dangerous. Yeah. The fuel that is inside that, the sap, is highly flammable. And we have actually added close to 200 parcels this year alone to the fire hazard fuel reduction program. Our overall goal and intent is within the next few years to be at 100% compliance. Mm-hmm. Basically, if you own a parcel within Cambria that is unimproved, it's going to need to be cut. We're not quite there yet, but we're hoping that's where we're going to be headed.
I was on Cambria Drive today at the very top, and where there are no homes that are unimproved, it's filled with Scotch broom right to the roadway, and you couldn't even walk through it, so thick. We don't have to wait for it to dry out. It'll burn like right now.
It will burn very hot right now. That's true, and that's why we want to be real aggressive in this venture.
Yeah. Okay. I'd like the public just to know what a danger they've got there.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Chaldicott. Any other questions of Captain Hollingsworth? We'll move on then to the utility manager's report. And Jim Adams, are you going to give that for Brian, or are we going to wait for Brian?
No, Brian's out for the rest of the week, so I'll be okay. Giving his report.
Fine.
I'm Jim Adams, the Water Department System Supervisor. Going on to the utility manager's report, the well levels are looking good. They're both full. Both creeks are probably activate SR4, which is out of the Santa Rosa Basin, to offset any greater demands in San Simeon to maintain those well levels up and try to keep them at a higher level. That'll happen in June, possibly next week. Moving on to the East-West Ranch Pipeline Project, it's essentially complete. There's a few minor details that need to be accomplished. The work should be complete within a week, so they should be getting a final very soon. Also, we have some training scheduled with the Clay Valve Company. A rep's going to come out and train the water staff on the new valves that were installed so we can properly maintain them and set them. And after that date of June 1, the system will be operating as designed. So that we're looking forward to that. The solids dewatering, the screw press, we still have not received the minor use permit from the county of San Luis Obispo, but they assured us that it's coming shortly. That could have occurred. I don't know. I'm not in that loop. But the RFP, Design Build Solids Dewatering Facility Project bid process, opened on May 17th. And the RFP packets have been provided to the plan houses locally and other states. The bid deadline is June 16th, 05, at 5 p.m., and the bid packets must be delivered to the district office by 5 p.m., and the district office is located at 1316 Tampson Drive, Cambria, California. No postmarks will be accepted on that, so they do have to bring them in. Moving on to the automated meter reading program, MVP Meter Repair Service is the contractor awarded to install all the meters. They're in the pleat that route, and they're going to move on to Happy Hill and Lemert, which will be another route, and then Pine Knolls, and then downtown, and then Lodge Hill. So in the next few months, in that order, is when you'll be affected. So you'll be out a few weeks as later in the sentence there. The SCADA system, we have sent the final comments to the SCADA of the SCADA master plan, and the final should be completed in the next few weeks. going back to the Fern Canyon hydrant incident that occurred in the afternoon on a Saturday at 3:15, all the tanks were remarkably full or close to full when this occurred. It took us some time to isolate the leak because of dirt roads and the valves being buried. We just it took us a little longer. We were able to accomplish this and shut the water off before Stewart Street tanks did go empty. We had approximately 7 feet of water left in the tanks, which is approximately 98,000 gallons at that one site. We estimate the loss, and you have to account for normal demand during this period of time, to be around 250,000 to 270,000 gallons. That's a rough estimate, but it's pretty accurate comparing production from three previous days in a row and how much higher it was. And all the tanks filled back up at about 11 p.m. on Saturday evening, so we recovered fairly quick. Other than that, I believe the rest of Brian's report is there, and if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Any questions of Jim Adams?
I'd like to, Mr. President.
Director Chaldicott.
I'd like to follow up on the...
To produce more water, but yeah, technically, yes. And depending on the type of time of year and the weather. We were fortunate that this happened in the afternoon. The afternoons are typically low demand. Right. And then the demand increases when you go into the evening hours during the dinner time and people coming home.
I guess what I'm thinking is that with that being able to upgrade our tanks, which is really the bottom line, there's a critical situation that after an incident such as a hydrant going out or a major fire, where they're going to pour water, we've got a window where there's really not much water around.
Yes. If this would have happened in the summer, we probably would have had two tank sites go dry.
Yeah.
That really underscores the precarious position we're in here with respect to the ability to fight fires. Without additional water storage, we could face some pretty disastrous consequences.
Yes.
Any other questions?
I'm sorry. Just,
Director Chalker.
Could I just go on a bit further? I'm not laying any blame at the staffs because I know you guys were out there moving a huge tree. I've seen the tree. I mean, you guys really got to it. And I think that was both about fire and water. Were you both working at? Thank you.
Yeah, so we coordinated quite well, actually. We couldn't have did it without them and vice versa, I believe. We needed some assistance in traffic control while we were shutting valves off. That hydrant is back online. It will be back online probably by tomorrow.
Just in the same line
Director
of thinking
Colvin.
Of... sorry.
Go ahead.
Same line of thinking of how do we protect ourselves. Is there any way this could have been prevented? Is there anything that we can do to not have that happen again? Or is this just life here in Cambria?
It is life. I mean, it's an occurrence that happens quite often. Cars, trees, the grading, which happens annually with the county.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Jim Adams?
I'd like to refer back to the... automatic meter reading. Do these gentlemen, I assume it's men, do they come identified? Because they do talk to the house owner. And I had a lady say that this unidentified guy stopped and said, "I'm working in your yard." I mean, I'll just paraphrase. And I was just concerned what the security was because, that's a situation which you really don't want to have. And I'm just wondering what really happens in real life.
We sent out flyers, we created door hangers that identified them, and then we were the contact number if there were any concerns. They are wearing bright orange shirts that state MVP on them, the few staff members that I've seen at this time. Their vehicles aren't marked. One is, and a couple aren't.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Jim Adams? Thank you, Jim. I see that the district engineer, Bob Gressens, has arrived. But before we go back in the agenda to cover the water master plan and other issues, we'll hear from Patrick Bradley, our finance officer. Patrick?
Thank you, President Sanders. You have my finance officer's report in front of you, so I'm not going to go into it in any detail. I do, and I'm kind of happy to report this, there is a correction to the water tender. We have received payment from Chevron. I'd like to think that some sort of threatening kind of thing from an Irish accountant, the fire benefit assessment. So it's sort of an ongoing procedural thing that we do every year. There's a series of steps that we have to go through. And so we're in that process at the moment. I'd like to just stop right here. Before I get into the community center audit, if there are any comments or questions related to those items.
Any questions of Mr. Bradley? There are none.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The community center audit has been completed. You've got a copy in front of you. It did not display any evidence of fraud or financial misrepresentation. They received a no opinion for two reasons, and one reason being their lack of control on some of the receipting of revenues coming into the community center. The other reason that is a concern to the auditors is what they call a going concern concept. And in the case of the community center, their liabilities are greater than their assets, so there's always that concern that do they have enough resources to continue operating. And note 11 on the financial, on the audit report, is actually a response written by the community center in terms of how they feel they can address their lack of revenue. Before I get into that a little bit, I'd just like to kind of briefly go through the no opinion and what that means. Essentially, when you turn in your financial statements to an auditor, you've got basically four broad categories. You've got assets, liabilities, revenue, and expense. They were able to pretty much, through their testing, verify the accuracy of the financial statements as presented to them in all of those areas except the revenue side. And their primary concern on the revenue side is that not all and included in the packet that you have statements, they didn't have supporting backup documentation. The bank statements reconciled. There were some documentation that they were able to find, but that because of the fact that they couldn't verify all of these receipts with in-house documentation. The other concern that they have, and it's related to their some of their fundraising events, particularly where they're selling raffle tickets, and there wasn't any control on, you know, people that are out there selling these tickets and bringing the money in. That has now been resolved by the community center. I think it's probably imperative to say here a couple of things as well. This is the first audit that the community center has had. The deficiencies that were noted in the audit report were not created by the current management of the community center. That those deficiencies have been there for quite some time. And I must say the management at the community center was very receptive to the suggestions as presented by the auditor, and they have already begun to implement a large number of them. So from that standpoint, the fact that it's a no opinion to me is not a big concern. If they were not receptive, if they hadn't already implemented some procedures, then I would say yes, it is a concern, but they have. They're doing the best they can with the staff that they have. There is one item here, though, that they, and I understand they just about have that resolved, and that is the amount of money that is was given to them from the Coalition for Youth. I understand they've just about got that issue resolved to the point where the Youth Coalition has set up another 501c3, and they're about to transfer, or perhaps already have, those funds over and getting them out of the community center, which relieves the center. Are they working on it? Yes, they are. And so are there any comments or questions related to the community center and its financial statements and the audit?
Yes, sir.
Director Funky Ballou.
You describe this as a no opinion letter. Is that true?
That is correct.
What are the possible options that auditors can provide after reviewing the client's books?
The options are as follows. They implement these procedures to a second audit, in which case then the audit better come in at something other than a no opinion, or then we really have a great deal of difficulty. The other real danger that they have, and I don't see it being a huge issue at this point for the community center, and that would be if they were to apply for grant funding, depending upon the size of the grant. Most funding agencies do require a clean opinion on their audit. The auditors really wrestled with the no opinion versus a qualified opinion, because they were able to find some of the documentation on the receipts, but not all of it. So they finally looked at it and kind of went back and forth with it and decided they were going to do a no opinion on it. There's essentially a no opinion, a qualified opinion, and then a clean opinion. And in this case, the center got a no opinion. And as I say, because of the fact that it's their first audit, the deficiencies that were that are there were there long before the current administration, and they have been very receptive to making the changes and, in fact, have already implemented a number of the suggestions that the auditor made. So when I factor in all of that, I have to soften the fact that it is a no opinion at this point.
Okay, so my question was, how many options are there when auditors review books? So one is cited in the audit with deficiencies that existed prior to the current management. Is that true?
That, yes.
What deficiencies are you talking about?
I'm referring to the fact that there wasn't any internal control on the receipting. I'm referring to the fact that they, right now, for example, they're numbering the when they give some of their volunteers the tickets to sell as fundraising events, they're now numbering them. They were never numbered. So the deficiencies in terms of controlling their revenue and the recording of that revenue coming in has always been there.
The fact that the community center has payroll tax obligations to the government, was that a deficiency that accrued prior to the current management, or is it a deficiency that accrued during the current management?
No, that's a deficiency that, and I'm not going to call that a deficiency, that is a payroll obligation that is there. Whether or not, when you turn that information over to the auditors, they verified it, yes, indeed, the community center does have a payroll tax liability. I know that they paid off part of that sometime in February or March. They still have a payroll tax liability, and they definitely do need to address that. From a true accounting standpoint, no, that's not considered a deficiency because the auditors could verify, yep, they do have that liability. It's there. Is it smart? Not necessarily, no.
So you're not expressing an opinion whether the payroll tax obligation arose from a prior management?
No.
Okay.
The reason they have the no opinion is due to the lack of internal control on the receipting procedures.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bob?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I'm fighting a little bit of a cold, so I apologize for being a little bit behind schedule today. And hopefully you can understand my voice.
Bob, I do want to tell you something. I do admire your casual approach today. It matches mine, but I did notice you brought a tie. Did you just what happened?
I mean, I couldn't quite pull that off.
Okay.
It's multitasking too much. Couldn't get the tie in.
Just working up to the last
the other things.
Here. Basically, I'll just summarize the highlights of a few water-related projects, and I'll put one overhead here towards the tail end of the discussion for you all. No, actually, it's going to be this one here, and I'll hand it to you. The Pine Knolls tank replacement, as you heard from Tammy earlier, I think we are conferring on and off with the Coastal Commission staff. There is a planned set hearing on our project for June 9th, which is a Thursday, and that's going to be at the Sheraton Los Angeles Harbor in San Pedro. Of course, the discussion is going to be on our tank project and the fact that we are still pursuing a coastal development permit from them and dealing with the appeals that have occurred on that. Later on today's discussion items of your agenda, there's going to be an item on a proposed working with through Corello right now with Padre and Associates to do the environmental legwork so we can get all the permits lined up to do the drilling that we need to do out on the San Simeon State Beach. And so far, the biologists have been out there carefully monitoring the situation with, like, snowy plovers and other species of concern. They're also looking at plants. Right now they have botanists out there looking at plants, so they're finishing that work up. That'll get wrapped into a report. It'll be both a mitigated negative declaration, which is CEQA language, and a finding of no significant impact or a mitigated FONSI.
Excuse me. Bob, you sound like you have what I had last month.
I don't know what happened here, but
it's okay. Take your time.
There'll be a 30-day public review period on that document, and then we'll have a hearing on it. And that'll tie into the permits to go to both the county for a minor use permit as well as the Coastal Commission for a permit from them. And that deals with where you're at in regards to the mean high tide line, which moves around during the season.
For the benefit of those who will be watching this on tape, can you briefly explain the nature of this project, the beach well concept?
Yeah. The intent here is to do a detailed study of the subsurface or alluvial materials that are out there. We know from earlier geophysical work, which isn't actual drilling, but it's using techniques that could tell you the depth of this material, there's probably 80 to 100 feet of depth out there that could be promising, but we want to make sure we know. Recently approved by the Coastal Commission for the city of Sand City up north that had a beach intake and a deep well injection for the brine discharge, for example. So that is a good way to go if it's feasible and we can prove it with this drilling. The drilling itself is relatively short period, maybe a 5 to 10 working day window. We're using some pretty sophisticated drilling techniques to get good quality samples. So it's fairly complicated, but we need good data in order, and this is key to get good data on that alluvial material that's out there.
And the city of Marina uses this technology for an existing desalination plant.
Right. They've
Isn't
been
that
operating
true?
For, I'm going to guess at this, probably more than 5 years now. I've been down there a couple of times now. I know they're getting ready to upgrade their plant fairly soon. So they have been operating with a beach collector well and a similar, although not quite the same, way of discharging their brine where it permeates out into the beach area.
Thank you.
So that'll be key information for us. And most likely the drilling's going to be late summer, just judging by the public hearing and what the steps that we have to work through yet with the regulatory agencies. Earlier this month, on May 11th, I did get to tour a desalination pilot plant at the Port Hueneme Navy Base. And this is kind of near and dear to my heart. I've been following this for years now. I was down there before 9/11 happened and before the security was quite as tight as it is right now. But there's a collaboration group of manufacturers, consultants in operation. I got to meet other agency reps that are also pursuing desal. And this is very closely aligned with the direction we'll probably follow in our detailed design as we go forward. So that was very useful to me.
Is there any information on how much they've been able to reduce the cost to produce fresh water?
That's a perfect
water?
Segue to this overhead. Let me put
Great.
That on. Could zoom in on the graph portion of that on the right-hand side, that'd be really helpful. Thank you. If I could borrow a pointer. This is a nice summary of what the Affordable Desalination Collaboration is looking at, and basically it's near and dear to an engineer's heart, so I don't know about other people at this point, but it's the cost or the amount of energy use in kilowatt hours per 1,000 gallons in or in meters cubic if you're a metric person. I usually go by this first column. And what they did here is just show four examples. They showed what the State Water Project water is running about, and this is oriented towards Southern California establishments. But you could see what the I forgot what CRI stood for, but the central I'm going to guess at that. I'll botch it. the recycled water RO is a little bit lower, but their range for operating. The general perception of what it cost out there with a lot of people, they still go back to some of the earlier plants that actually operated in this much higher energy use range. And here's where the experts are currently at. They seem to have a consensus of opinion that it costs roughly a little over 11 cents to maybe 14 kilowatt hours per 1,000 gallon produced, but they're going to be down in this range here, which is, you can see that's a substantial drop from where the general perception has been, where some of the experts' opinions currently are. Hmm. So it's a study that's ongoing. It's probably going to be going on for at least another 6 months or so.
Is that the result of improvement in reverse osmosis membrane technology?
Some of it is in the actual improvements in the membranes themselves. A lot of it is dealing with a fairly novel energy recovery device. So they are trying to just sharpen the pencil as much as they can on this. The pumps they use are positive displacement. The membranes are pretty efficient as far as not having as much energy loss as the water is squeezed through them. And then the energy recovery device is very highly efficient. And that's really the key to it.
So the data thus far indicates that desalinated seawater can be produced at a range of cost that's roughly equivalent to the production of traditional water.
Yeah, they were down in about the down south. I think they were talking about a $500 to $600.
6 years ago, and they had three parallel projects going. One of which was the dialysis, and the other one I think was just filtration along with desal. Now I'm just wondering if this is the same plant, whether they've actually.
Now let me flip to another page here. Okay. And show you a few pictures. It's a little different location. This is an engineer's dream come true as far as being able to do research on desalination. I get excited about this.
I can tell you're enjoying yourself.
I wish I had better
Doug.
Pictures to show you because this
I'm
doesn't do it justice.
Yeah.
But they have like these Quonset hut buildings out on the Navy base. They don't normally allow photos. I was able to get a few photos. But they have actually a seawater desalination research facility on a Navy base, which I don't know if that's the same location. I think there were two different locations, as I recall.
Yeah, I guess really what I was trying to find out was whether, in fact, they dropped these other two procedures and were now favoring the RO, because that's really...
We are definitely favoring the RO process.
That's fine.
Yeah. And it's just an ongoing research facility that the Navy base does. They look at desal locations where they're using seawater. Very technically competent people run it. They're excellent to talk to and get ideas from. They work with some manufacturers in testing equipment, so they are working with ADC. If I could just move this picture a little bit.
Bob, while you're doing that, you can think about the answer to this question. Has the Navy experimented with the beach well collector system and brine dispersion system similar to what was approved for Sand City and what has been in operation in Marina?
I actually walked by an experiment in progress on an intake while I was there. They didn't talk about it as part of this tour, but they actually had an ongoing experiment on a beach well intake. And I've spoken with them in the past, and they have designed similar intake and discharge systems that we're investigating.
Good.
This is just a shot of their intake system. It's just right out of their harbor. They filter it, and then they run it through their RO system, and getting some very good results on it. There's nothing really elaborate about other than they just have a couple of pipes running down up here and they put them into the ocean. They have a little strainer on the end of them.
You know, Bob, if you had them in color, I might get a little bit more excited.
Yeah.
you know, since you can't take photographs of this stuff, we'll take what we can get.
One of those things, you know. I'm glad this kind of blurs. I don't like my photos. I'm not going to say anything. And that concludes my discussion on DCEL. Let me move on. Oh, one last point. I'm still trying to get the project management plan from the Army through their system. The last I spoke with their project manager on the Water Resource Development Act funding is that they were doing some internal checks on it before it goes to Washington, D.C. So I hope to hear soon on that it actually went to Washington, D.C., because then it's about a 60-day process before they feel it could be approved, which would allow some funding from those sources of funds.
We expect that approval in August, Bob. Is that
that's what I
approximately
I
the time frame?
Estimated August okay. time frame. We're also dealing with some Prop 50 funding possibilities. We didn't make it on the first round of funding that occurred earlier this year, but there's going to be a second round late this summer. And what's driving us on that is our urban water management plan update. I presented that to you several months ago. DWR has not approved it yet, so I might have to come back at a future meeting to go over changes. It's mainly dealing with the water conservation measures. We have a hard time detailing out each individual savings from all the measures we do. We kind of lump them together in our record, so it's a record-keeping problem that we have to pull that out and get the report at this juncture. But the county did release its updated project description for the Cambria and San Simeon Acres community plans, and that has some impact on it. I'll talk about that later in the discussion of today. So all three of these efforts are kind of coming together at this point.
Good.
Lastly, East-West Ranch Pipeline, we had a final walkthrough with Remedia Construction, and I'm not sure, maybe Jim already reported on that. So
Jim did report on that.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions of Bob Gressens? Thank you for a very thorough report. We'll move on now to the consent calendar. There are no items pulled from the consent calendar. Prior to a motion, we will have the general manager read the consent calendar agenda.
Okay, item 7A is to approve expenditures for the month of April 2005. Item 7B, approve minutes of the Board of Directors meeting for April 28, 2005. 7C, adopt resolution 27-2005 authorizing contract with Aflac, that's the American Life Assurance Company of Columbus. 7D is to adopt resolution 29-2005 approving the fire apparatus / engineer position description, and 7E, extension of intent to serve letter for Kestrel Point Senior Care Facility, M. Clark applicant, APN 024.191.052.
Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Consent calendar is approved. There are no Uniform Fire Code Appeals Board matters on this agenda, so we
do annually for our water and wastewater fixed charges. Patrick has provided in the staff report, definitely want to give the credit where it's due, the estimated amounts, the fiscal impact for water, the estimated revenue is $174,138, and for wastewater, $113,048. That's the revenue generated from these charges on accounts. One of the other items that is required, we give an estimated attachment of estimated revenues and expenditures explaining those numbers. And then what's the last thing, Patrick? You want to join in? I may be missing something here.
The only really thing to add to this is part of our funding for our capital improvement program. It's part of this annual assessment that we put on the tax rolls every year. So this is part of the procedural thing that we have to go through. And because of the fact that we're in the water moratorium at this point and we're not generating any development revenue, although it doesn't look like a whole lot of money, but it is a piece of our funding source for our capital improvement program. So that's why it really is an important thing.
I did receive a letter from a constituent who had a concern about whether or not this assessment constitutes a tax that requires a two-thirds vote. I did have an extended conversation with District Counsel Art Montandon. This is an assessment that has been on the books for many years, if not decades, and is not a new tax or assessment subject to the requirements of Prop 218.
We're also authorized to do it under there's a government code section.
It's a statutory regulation.
Statutory, absolutely. Yes. Thank you. Any questions of the general manager or the finance?
You know, I think I'm trying to remember. I think you're right. I think there was a change somewhere in the 90s. I can't remember.
But I think it was
the passage of Prop 218.
Yeah. And the other point is this a fixed amount? Because I've seen this number stay this way for 10 years, and obviously it doesn't buy as much capital improvements as it did 10 years ago.
Yes, it is.
By a long range.
It is a fixed amount, and actually it's the amount that's fixed by the statutory regulation that allows us to impose it. The county of San Luis Obispo tax on, and this year it's going to be $3 per assessment, so when the residents get it, it's not only what we have outlined here in a staff report, it's also been increased by $3 to go to the county. But it is a fixed amount and has been for years.
Is it something we fixed some years ago, or is this from Sacramento? Or
the fixed amount, however this got into the statutes for the state of California, that's what set the amount. And how that was determined at that point, I don't know. This was way back in 87, 86, somewhere in that time frame.
I'm just wondering whether, in fact, we could check this, whether, in fact, that's something which is variable or could be varied.
I would guess if we tried to increase it, then we might get into the 218 vote situation. Is that me?
I believe so.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it's you. Yeah. Okay, that was my question. Thank you.
It's definitely something that we can research. It's a very good question.
Before we open the public hearing, are there any other questions that board members have of staff?
I was just going to clarify one comment or question that Director Shaldicott asked, and the charges are for improved properties or unimproved properties with intent to surplus.
Yes, please. At the lectern here, please.
I have a couple of questions.
Please give us your name for the record.
Don DeBono.
Thank you.
I've lived here since the 60s, and I used to come up here when I was a kid and never thought I'd ever live here. But I have a couple of questions on the sewer charge. And when they put the sewers in, there were bonds floated. Are these bonds ever going to be paid off? And if they were paid off, does this sewer charge come down?
There is debt to finance certain parts of the sewer treatment plant and sewer system. Patrick, would you like to respond?
Initially, when the district was formed, there was an assessment district 1 and 2 on a sewer bond that was funded by the County of San Luis Obispo, and actually the payments all went to the County of San Luis Obispo. None of that flowed through the district. The reason that the county got involved was at that time the district did not have, if my memory is correct in this, did not have a sufficient credit rating to go out on its own and borrow any money to install the initial sewer. Since then, that has all been refinanced. That's been paid off. That has been paid. So that was the part of the original infrastructure for the district, and that has been paid. The sewer district currently does have some debt, which has actually nothing to do with the sewer and water availability. The debt that the sewer district does, the sewer department currently has, is for the wastewater treatment plant, and that's part of our operating budget. The availability charge is something that was established back in, I'm going to say, 86. It's a statutory thing, and we use it.
Been tested for what is in the water and how much wastewater is being dumped in there, plus the radiation, the radiation levels.
This is a public hearing on item 9A. We're a little bit off the subject here with your question, but if you'll stay around after the meeting, we can get you an answer to your question. Okay.
And one other thing, and I'd like to know the number of, roughly the number of gallons that are being dumped into the ocean as far as treated water?
We'll get you an answer to that as well.
Okay.
Okay. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on the water availability standby charges? Apparently not. The public hearing is closed. What is the pleasure of the board?
I'll defer to my...
No, I was actually just going to put a rebuttal that we don't actually dump water in the ocean, just so that's for the public to know.
Correct.
We'd like to establish a relationship between our wastewater and the ocean. Anyway, I'd like to make a motion to make the following findings that are reflected in resolution number 30-2005, fourth paragraph in the top, beginning, whereas it is hereby found that the water and wastewater standby fees, and the very next paragraph, beginning, whereas it is hereby found and determined the water and wastewater standby or availability charges that we make, that those findings have been made and are true, and therefore adopt resolution. Can I interrupt the orderly flow just for a moment? I apologize for my being late. I wanted to make a report. As you know, I'm a member of the Cambria Forest Committee, and we previously gave direction to staff to determine the viability of implementing the management plan that the Forest Committee has given to us, and we have accepted. Both the Forest Committee and the San Luis Obispo County Community Fire Safe Council have drafted letters requesting that the fine that the State Water Quality Control Board will impose, if they have not already done so, on the Cambria School District for polluting the stream. And the Water Quality Control Board has indicated that it would consider paying out those fines to relevant local organizations. And both the committee and the Cambria Community Fire Safe Council have drafted letters that are requesting that a portion of those funds be delivered to implementing the plan, for purposes of implementing the plan. That's what I would like, and I'm hoping that staff would have time to give us some reports and results as to the viability of the forest management plan, wishes to have those funds be provided to implementing the plan to make all of us safer here in town. I will be providing copies of the letters. I only have them in draft form, but I've been promised by my colleagues on the committee and my friends at the Fire Safe Council, they will have signed original letters delivered to staff. And I would like staff, if they can perhaps present to the board for the next meeting a proposed resolution for our review and acceptance, so we can support those fines going to implementation of the plan. Okay?
Dr. Chaldica?
I would support that.
Thank you.
As would I. There are some fire safe aspects to the Cambria build out reduction plan that is coming along and should be completed in June. And I'd like to see staff consider Director Funky Ballou's request in light of that plan. Okay. Satisfied?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Item 9B is a public hearing to consider the adoption of Resolution 31-2005, authorizing the Fire Benefit Assessment Consumer Price Index Adjustment. Is there a report?
There is. Thank you. This resolution authorizes a 5.4% Consumer Price Index, or CPI, adjustment in the existing fire suppression assessment fee, effective July 1st of this year, in compliance with a fund of how the fire suppression assessment came to be. It was voted in the spring of 2003. it's levied using a square footage basis and how properties are developed. Now, you'll see on the back page of the report, Patrick did provide what the assessments will go up to, depending on whether it's a vacant lot, a single-family residence, less than 3,600 square feet or greater than, and then what the commercial range is for these fire suppression assessments. Patrick, did you have anything to add?
The only thing I'd like to add is, and I kind of apologize on this, I also had intended to include in here what the current assessment is, and I failed to do that, so there is no basis of comparison. Obviously, it's a 5.4% difference, but I had intended to include that in the report and did not, so I apologize for that.
And this adjustment is something that was part and parcel of the package that went to the voters when they approved.
Yes,
the fire benefit assessment, is that correct?
Indeed, and we are to bring it back to the board every year for consideration.
Right. Any questions of staff?
I believe that we are able to undertake our 24/7 staffing as a result of this.
This helps contribute to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the benefit. You only know about at midnight. Thank you.
That's right. Any other questions of staff? This is a public hearing. We will open the public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on this matter? Apparently not. The public hearing is closed. What is the pleasure of the board?
I'll move to adopt resolution 31-2005, authorizing a 5.4% consumer price.
Any opposition? Motion carries. Item 9C is a public hearing to consider adoption of Resolution 28-2005, authorizing adoption of the East-West Ranch Bluff Trail Mitigated Negative Declaration and Mitigation Monitoring Reporting Checklist. Is there a staff report?
Yes. I'm going to turn this over to Connie Davidson. She's our professional services consultant who's acting as our project manager for this project.
Welcome, Connie.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Let me first just go through some of the key points in the staff report, and then I would like to read a couple of comments that we did get over the last 2 days, did get included in your packet. So I'd like to first start off with the staff report. On the fiscal impact part of it, you know that this is funded by the Coastal Conservancy at $300,000. It's a purely construction grant. An additional $100,000 is in kind that the CCSD has to kick in. Ben Bohr, who is working on the project with me, he and I have had a lot of discussion on the in-kind part of it, just so you understand that we're being really careful about that. And we feel that with the balance of management time in-house and also some construction activities that we can use, volunteer help as well as CCSD help, we'll definitely meet the $100,000 in kind. In terms of the mitigated neg deck, that is not funded under the grant because it is a construction grant. The $14,550 that was approved by you has come in within budget. Approximately $4,200 of that will be paid for by the county as part of the EIR on the East-West Ranch when we get to that point. We also had some permitting fees. We had a lot of them waived, but we had quite a few fees. So we ended up already paying $1,400 for some fees there, and there may be other small ancillary fees as we get further along in the permitting process. We also must produce a habitat, archaeological, and erosion reveal that. We have stayed totally with the footprint of the existing trail. The essence of the improvements are basically replacing 230 feet of 3 to 4 feet boardwalk with 830 feet 6 foot boardwalk. Ben walked every square inch of that trail many times and evaluated under different weather conditions, knowing where to put that boardwalk to alleviate some of the pooling of water and other issues out there. So it's been very custom designed on where that boardwalk's going to go. We also are replacing the two bridges out there. They're not structurally adequate. They need to be replaced. Initially, we were thinking we were going to have to go with this engineered prefab bridges. We're not. The 3Cs, California Conservation Corps, they do these bridges all the time on site, and we're building wood bridges They're not going to be as funky as what we have out there, but they're going to
be... I beg
be,
your pardon?
I know.
It's a technical planning term.
Different spelling. So anyhow, we're going with a very natural feel. It's going to improve access for disabled people as well as all users on the project, and we were able to keep some of the permitting to a minimum based on keeping with the footpath the way it is. And that's the East-West Ranch Management Plan requirement, and also we believe what the community wants. So we did not receive any public comment during the 30-day review period. We also received no comment from the State Clearinghouse, all the agencies that they sent the neg deck to. We just had one comment from North Coast Swap. Actually, not a formal comment from Fish and Game. Morrill Group, our environmental company, contacted them because Morrill Group is out there doing some surveys of plants and found a plant called the cobwebby thistle, which basically they wanted to assure Fish and Game, because that's a hot plant there for Fish and Game, and they wanted to assure them that it will be well outside of the construction area. So those are the only two comments. I have them in writing, and probably I can give them to Kathy so she can put it in the record. And I don't know if you have any other questions.
Any questions of Connie? Director Funky Blue.
This question and statement, but the first question is to Tammy. When are the results of the recreation survey going to be done?
We're hoping it will probably be, if it's not next month, it'll be July.
Okay. First of all, I want to commend Connie and staff for this project. These are the kinds of projects that I think should be a model for all of us. Even though it's expensive, we have to come up with $100,000. The fact that the Coastal Conservancy grant is chipping in three times that amount is a major boon to enhancing the most popular activity and site in Cambria by far, the East-West Ranch, the jewel of the recreation of the people in this community. So I support this big time.
Yay. Any other
Thank
comments?
You.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Connie? Or?
And also working with North Coast Engineering and doing the sediment and erosion plan. So really, Ben and I are working with three different entities to produce these plans that need to get to the county before our final permits will be granted. So those are underway. We're getting into that, and we'll be working with North Coast Swap on those as well.
And do you have any timing sense now that you can tell us?
I did talk to planning this morning, and I'm hopeful that it will be before the Planning Commission in July. That's what we're working towards, so that we can start construction in August.
What's the time frame for the construction, do you know?
Well, we have to be finished by March 30th, 2006. So whatever it takes. I do know that I talked to Bruce Boniface of the California Conservation Corps, and he's getting quite a backlog of projects. They're doing the Moonstone Beach extension. They're also working on our Santa Rosa Creek Trail project, which I just heard we were going to be able to start the trail in 2 weeks, and now we've got some pond turtle nesting issues, so I think that's going to be delayed till August. So Bruce said they'll make it work, whatever they have to do. This is a high-priority project for them. So we have to be out of there by March 30th.
So somewhere between August and March, we'll have a Bluff Trail. Trail.
Hey. We have to.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Great. Thank Any you. Other questions of Connie? Director Chalvica.
I'd just like to confirm the sea cliff entrance, which is the north. Was that going to be improved? Or?
No.
Okay.
No. We would love to make some improvements there, but this funding will not cover that at this time. We're hoping eventually that we'll be able to do more improvements on the trail at a later date. Maybe, who knows who might grant that funding. But right now, we're not planning to improve that.
And we're hoping that it'll be sort of wet weather accessible?
Up the access and boardwalk more of it. And obviously, in between the boardwalk is going to be the, we're going to widen all the dirt paths, compact it, sculpt it, and clean it up. So there will be cleanup in that area for sure.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah.
The accessibility is probably the most important thing, where currently it is not accessible for folks who are physically challenged. This is definitely going to provide for that.
Well, not on the north end, actually,
well,
Tammy.
Yeah. That's right.
The south end will, you know, it does have a handicap parking space there, and there's going to be a big swath of new boardwalk, about 600 square feet, that's going to go in there 6 feet wide. But the ADA issue has been a major issue to us. We wanted to make this as accessible to disabled people as possible with the funding that we have. And I think we've done, you know, we've gone from 200 square feet of boardwalk to 1,830 and widened everything, and the bridges are going to be 6 feet wide too. So, and then the other thing that we're planning to do is really solid signage so that people who are disabled who come to that south entrance can say, you know, this looks like something that's really doable for me, or maybe, you know, I can only do it to this piece. And we're planning to put a little lookout after the first 600 square feet there. We're going to do like a little lookout so that people in a wheelchair could do a little turnabout there. And so we're greatly improving accessibility for the disabled and others.
Great.
And one point I wanted to make, too, is that we are designing the trail per state park guidelines. We got our hands on the official state park rural trail guidelines, and so we're really going according to their program very much. And the three C's are all tied into that as a state agency.
Any other?
But maybe if you had a moment to rest, you might be able to stay longer.
Right. So. Yeah, definitely.
Thanks.
Something maybe I can talk to Ben about, possibly look at that.
It's not a swap area. I mean, that's where they shine in the bench department.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll talk to Joellen.
Any other questions of Connie? Thank you, Connie.
Thank you.
This is advertised as a public hearing. The public hearing is open. Is there anybody present today who wishes to testify on this matter? Apparently not. Public hearing is closed. What is the pleasure of the board?
I'd like to make the motion, please, to adopt resolution 28-2005 authorizing adoption of the Bluffs Trail mitigated negative declaration.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
May I make a clarification that further authorizes the general manager to sign the notice on behalf of the district and file the notice with the County of San Luis Obispo?
Implicit in the motion.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now move on to regular business. Item 10A is a status report on the build-out reduction plan. We'll hear from the district engineer, Bob Gressens.
Mr. President, should the record reflect that he's now wearing a cravat? Obviously, he takes this a lot more seriously than the other presentation.
Apparently, he can multitask better than I thought. No. Congratulations, Bob.
Boy, you're welcome. Thank you. Couldn't get by that. I apologize for not having a written report on this. To report at this time, we're going to continue meeting with them. Again, there's about three different issues coming together here. It's the build-out reduction plan. It's the program-level EIR and the water master plan. And now it's the Cambria community plan update by the county. So we're trying to pull them all together and make sure they're coordinated. So that's roughly the gist of where we're at this point. I expect something more concrete come the June meeting.
Bob, do you have confidence that RBF will be able to finish this report in June, this plan in June?
I know there's some legal questions that might slow the progress that they're still researching. Right now, I'd say it's about a 50-50 chance in my mind.
Okay.
Right. Legal counsel is reminding me they're still researching some titles and deed restrictions as well in some areas, and that is subject to how fast that information could flow out of the title companies as well.
Any questions of the district engineer?
Well, I was thinking that we were going to make a sort of a separate document of the legal issues, weren't we? So perhaps we could push to get the remainder of the report completed for our review and some distribution. Does that sound reasonable, Art?
Well, we'll do our best. I mean, okay. That's a good point.
It seems like since we're having the hearing on the county plan in June, and it'd be good for some of us to have both documents in hand.
And, okay, of course, an override, not monetary, to get it done, we ought to do that.
Understood.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sure. Any other questions of the district engineer? There's no action required on this matter, so we will move to item 10B, which is consideration of resolution 32-2005, authorizing an offer to dedicate a conservation easement at the Lamert Tank site. The district engineer will give us a report.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I do have a brief PowerPoint to lead into this discussion item. I don't know about the, I hope everybody can read that. Is there a way to change that contrast? Why don't you try the next slide and see if anything improves on the next one. Okay. And, this is related to the Pine Knolls Tank Project, even though it, we're talking about Lamert here. And I'll just make a few points here. One of the issues that we're faced with on Pine Knolls is the need to use land that's out in the nature conserve square feet for a temporary tank that we have to build out in the woods. So that had some significant requirements to go out into the northeastern expansion area. Next slide, please. We then developed the two steel tank concept, which we had received an emergency permit on back in October of 2004. That required about 9,115 square feet of area out into the northeastern expansion area, which is outside our existing property line. Next slide. We then revised the design. This is actually Design Revision 3. The number on this says 2. It's actually Design Revision 3. I call this the peanut design. We were trying to save the two trees that are kind of the hallmark of the site that are on the site right now that you see as you drive up to the driveway. Thank you. And this required about 7,000 square feet outside of our existing property line. And finally, the current design. Next slide, please. And that we're calling that Design Revision 4. We've gotten it down to 6,100 square feet as far as the area required outside of our property line. So that's where we're at right now. And the concept here is to offer an easement on the Lamert site. And if you can go to the next slide, I'll show that area. Basically, we have the Pine Knoll site. And if I could borrow your pointer for a second. The Lamert on this portion of the Lamert tank site, it's contiguous with the same easement area, and it has some very nice pine trees and coastal live oaks on it. There's a need to have to remove some French broom plants and other understory that are invasive species there, and probably a need to put some fencing inside the perimeter of this. This whole parcel, by the way, is currently zoned residential single family on the county's land use map as opposed to open space. So this would essentially change that to an open space type of use as a conservation easement. So without going any further on this, I know that we have attached an April 6th letter by President Sanders to Assemblyman Sam Blakesley outlining this idea. And we've also attached to this a resolution to approve, to formalize this offer process. I will add that we are also doing 2 acres of reforesting or replanting proposed on the West Ranch area. The cost of that work is about $75,000. That's part of what the contractor would be required to do. So, again, there's 150 or so trees being planted along with some watering and so forth out there. That'll extend the edge of an existing pine forest. So this would be in addition to that mitigation that was one of the adopted mitigations on this project to begin with when we went through the CEQA process. We do think...
Questions of the district engineer. I see Jim Adams raising his hand. Jim?
Yeah, Bob, I just wanted to ask, that parcel is in an existing ESHA also, isn't it?
Yes, it is. This is actually within the county's or the Coastal Commission's, whichever map you want to go by, mapped ESHA area. The northeastern expansion area is not within a mapped ESHA area. So there are some differences. Thank you.
And does the offer area impede on our water operations whatsoever?
We have to keep enough room around the tank and kind of carved out an area about, you know, 18 to 20 feet or so around the perimeter of the tank. The perimeter is down here, so we need to allow room to get around the tank. There is an issue with far as an emergency access right here out of the cemetery that might have to allow a maintenance access for emergencies through here for some ambulance service or something like that if that happened while there was a funeral going on or something like that.
Any other questions of the district engineer? Bob, I think it bears noting that the current tank design actually results in a take of less area. Excuse me, the current tank design results in a take of ESHA area that is less than what the original one tank design would have required. And secondly,
out of the existing pine knolls tank is, in our minds, there's some questions about whether you would call that ESHA. We know it's been disturbed right in the past and so forth. There's a pipeline that goes through and that type of thing. So, but it is, I think the differences in my mind are the need to remove the French broom plants on the Lemert site and probably do some work with the understory to satisfy the biologist to make it a little nicer. You know, it's a cleanup effort. The trees are incredible on the Lemert site. I was out there this morning. I had a hard time getting the pictures that come out right, but there are some beautiful Monterey pines and coastal live oaks on that property at Lemert. They're very tall and appear to be doing pretty nicely. I'm not a biologist, but I mean
they look very healthy.
They're very tall.
Right. Yep. Any other questions of the district engineer?
You had one.
Director Chaldicott.
Looking at your map there, Bob, we're offering roughly about between a third and a half of our site. Is that correct? Just looking at the lines there.
Roughly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not the whole mm-hmm. site. It's just
right.
It's the back half, I guess. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Director Coben.
This may be out of order, but I'd like to make the suggestion that since the concrete tank was really a concept and not really a design, that we just stop bringing it into the discussion. You know, that it seems like the real design started with the two-tank thing. And anyway, it always brings up more issues, so it seems like mm-hmm. it'd be mm-hmm. good if we could just let it go. It never was a real design, and we never tried even in any way to implement it.
To approve item 9B, all those in 10B, I'm sorry, 10B. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Item 10C is a staff report on the Cambria community plan.
And that's Bob Gressens.
Bob Gressens again. Bob,
thank
this
you,
is
Tim.
Your day.
Thank you. Well, we have a brief PowerPoint on this item, and let's see. Wait.
Just
Excuse me. This came about because we had originally planned to have a formalized resolution and information exchange with the county, and they actually I got behind, and essentially they've released their report, the updated project description for the Cambria and San Simeon Acres community plan, as well as a draft EIR. So I've modified it just to show some highlights on the report, and particularly those that relate to the proposed land use. And we've been communicating on and off with the planning staff. We've provided them and exchanged a lot of information on land use planning. Information from our geographic information system, for example, has been an ongoing work effort. So that was shared with them. Reports, the updated reports by the county were released on May 18th, last week. They are planning to have a June 23rd public hearing with the Planning Commission. And there are two documents here. There's a public hearing draft, revised project description, and there's also a draft environmental impact report. The written comments to the county on the EIR part of this are due by July 5th of 2005. Next slide, please. This is just a shot of their public, the revised project description that they produced, and with their consultant. I don't have the name of their consultant in my head, to give them credit. Next slide, please. The highlights that, just going through it rather quickly, there's a 20-year planning horizon. They have a proposed plan of 4,975 housing units. There are other alternatives within the plan. Some of the key things on the land use, there's the land use changes that I'll be getting to in a minute. There's also a zero net increase policy that they're recommending. But I think the real key issue here is the earlier plan had as many as 11,925 units, housing units in it. Now they're down to about 6,130, particularly with the zero net increase policy coupled with the land use changes. So that's a substantial drop for the ultimate build-out number than what's been in prior reports. They're also recommending a 1% growth rate, and that's just a shot of their EIR report. Next. This is the land use map, and it's in your handout. I to spare the public trying to squint at this thing, it's going to be really difficult. basically, some of the significant district-owned properties that are changing are dealing with the East West Ranch, where there's a planned community park. The West Ranch, where they used to have single-family residential, becomes open space. There's an area that was the ex-Behringer property that becomes a public facility that used to be multifamily that the district acquired. Those are the keys that they're working on. I think they've allowed enough flexibility in their limitations on use to allow us to do what we plan to accomplish out in those areas. So I'd be glad to answer any questions that you may have at this point.
Bob, how much of the district's property would be reclassified as public facility property?
The main one will be the old Behringer property that was off of Main Street by Santa Rosa Creek Road, and I believe that's around 6 acres or so.
Okay.
They are changing, I believe, let me look at this right now. The tank sites are staying as residential single family. I've spoken with the county planner on that, and he explained we have certain flexibility by keeping it that way, so right. I'm going with that recommendation that they've made to me.
Okay. Any questions of the district engineer?
Yes.
Director Funky Blue.
Bob.
Okay, it's up there.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're in the same wavelength. The proposed plan calls for 4,975 housing units, right?
That was what the county has in their current report. Right?
But the next bullet point has it reduced down to 6,130 housing units. Is that right?
I left out some details. Let me explain a little bit better. Thank you. There are several other alternatives in here. They have, I want to say, three or four alternatives. They have a no-growth alternative that they've estimated at about 4,000. They have another lower-growth one that is at 4,650, which matches our earlier goal. They have what they're calling their proposed plan at 4,975 units. And lastly, they have another one. The name of it escapes me. But it's the 6,130, which is essentially where the curve flattens out in the future, where there won't be any more growth with the land use changes that they recommended, as well as some of the adjustments they've made to the urban reserve line.
So how should we respond?
Well, this is just information, just getting it out there to you to let you know that there are some, need to follow the meetings. We can certainly get more copies of the report made and out to you. There will be a response letter due by the 5th of July. We will be utilizing RBF to assist in that coordination as well. So it would make the most sense to bring this up again in the June board meeting
has spent quite a bit of time trying to match the county's plans with our plans. I mean, obviously 4,650 is what we're on record as being appropriate, but I think that any letter that we sent to the county should express recognition for their moving in a very serious direction.
Good. I agree.
I agree as well. And I think some commendation is due Bob Gressens and RBF for working with the county and establishing a teamwork kind of framework that has resulted in something that is much better than what we started out with.
Great. Thank you.
Director Coben?
As long as we're commending people, I think the North Coast Alliance ought to have some commendation as well. They've stayed on top of this, and they met with the county people yesterday. And so as a citizens group that actively is working on achieving the same ends that we're all after here is the lower growth rate than was originally put in the plan. And the way I understand it is the number of lots that the county is identifying is about the same as ours. So once we get our build-out reduction plan out in the public, I think the difference between where we want to go and where they think it's possible to go is getting narrower. It's getting more to look pretty much the same, I think.
So. Well, we're trying to at least share the same data as much as possible.
Yes, I think that's what I'm trying still, to say, is right, that right. We have the same data, but our intent is not to let it build out to the extent that they say it's possible.
6,000 they're looking at. Does that include commercial properties as well?
No, that would be residential housing units. Now, they do have a mixed-use category that I believe is in there. So if apartments were built, and I really need to pull in the county planners' discussion as we get into details. I don't want to represent that I've developed this report at all. It's really just the highlights as I've been looking at it the last few days since we received it. So it's as I understand, that number is housing units and does not have the commercial component in it.
Thanks.
Any other questions of the district engineer? There's no action required on this. It's simply a status report. Bob, we will be expecting a more formalized report for the June meeting. Is that right?
That's correct.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Welcome. Thank you.
With that, we'll move on to item 10D, which is consideration of Ordinance 04-2005, amending Chapter 8.04 of the Cambria Community Code to allow transfer of water commitments. Is there a staff report?
Yes, it'll be by District Counsel Art Montandon.
Honorable Chair and Board Members, my name is Art Montandon, District Counsel. I have been working on this amendment in an attempt to empower the general manager to enter into contracts which would put into place some of the negotiations that have been ongoing with different people in the community for some months. We were approached by two separate people regarding the ability for them to transfer existing water commitments in exchange to be considered by the board. The ordinance itself is quite simple. It doesn't mean that when being drafted, we didn't look at a number of different amendments in different sections to be able to accomplish the same thing. By the time it came to actually finishing the product up, we looked and tried to, what I had done was put it into a catch-all type of provision that authorizes the general manager to enter into contracts to transfer existing water commitments, which now includes commercial commitments and residential commitments from commercial property. If those transfers do in fact achieve the district goals of reducing current and future water demand, to provide affordable housing opportunities, to retire lots, and to provide permanent open space, the power is with the general manager. The practice will be that these types of things will always be brought to the board because of their significance. Normally, we will see them in closed session because they involve the offer to the district to purchase property, and that's where these started, and that's why the public has not heard a large amount about these things. I have listed the projects that we're considering and have considered in the staff report in some brief form for discussion and for information. The first involves the negotiations that have been ongoing with Mr. Dirk Winter regarding the Cambria Nursery property. He had wanted to be able to transfer an existing residential EDU off that property because it's commercial under their current ordinances that are on the property, that he retires a significant residential lot in the community, and the lot that we've discussed and currently have an escrow is on Stewart Street. It's five lots that are contiguous to Land Conservancy lots and other CCSD lots, and his portion to contribute to the purchase of that property would be $110,000. The purchase price in escrow is $126,500. The Land Conservancy and the neighbors in that particular area have raised the difference to be able to make this transaction take place. He would also waive the extension fees that he had previously paid for these particular EDUs on the property. If the board authorizes this ordinance, then the general manager can enter into the agreement to complete this particular transaction. The second transaction involves the provision of affordable housing by People Self-Help Corporation. As many know, People Self-Help operate the Schoolhouse Lane properties, and they're seeking to acquire property to the north to extend that particular project. Their initial proposal is to extend it by 22 units. They had hoped to be able to someday, if water becomes available, to provide 40 additional units to the existing site. So that's why that is written into this particular proposal. They would also, upon acquisition, dedicate approximately 4 acres to permanent open space, which is the canyon area next to the road behind the project. The seller of the property, Mr. Brad Clark, would be able to move parcel. Each of those particular transfers would require the normal retirement of a lot or a lot equivalent. There's different lots we're looking at. I've talked to Mr. Clark today. There was three lots he had hoped to build multifamily on that have been consolidated that would probably, in my opinion, qualify as single lots for purposes of retirement because of their size and they fit the ordinance. And that would be the type of things that we would accept, I believe, as retired lots. He would also be allowed to transfer the 0.72 commercial EDU that exists on the schoolhouse site. It would obviously have to go to another commercial site to be used. I tried to incorporate something into this to encourage his selling or donating this particular commercial EDU to a nonprofit. We were discussing the possibility of a nonprofit needing such use downtown, and in exchange for not requiring the lot dedications that would normally be required. And if he did accomplish that, then Tammy would have the authority to reduce the number of lots to accept as dedications. Both of these transactions have no financial impact on the CCSD. The benefits that are listed in the staff report are the ones that are within the ordinance that allow this particular type of transaction. If you favorably consider the ordinance presented to you today, it goes into effect immediately, and the transactions can be consummated in the next day or so. Draft contracts have been drawn and are being circulated among the parties as we speak.
Why should the board give its power over to the general manager to make transactions that, in this case, I support them, and I've nothing against Tammy, but mm-hmm. what happens when Tammy's gone? So we get some power crazed GM, and we're laughing. But we've had that in our history. We've had several power crazed GMs who've done things on their own, regardless of what the board authorizes or not. As is an illness that afflicts many boards. But please explain to me why we should give up this power of oversight to the GM.
Well, the truthful reason why it's written this way for purposes of today is to be able to finish these transactions and the escrows as they're set up today. I did not have time based on my other workload to bring the contracts back for your personal consideration at the next meeting. The practical way this would go is whenever you're dealing with real property transactions, you would consider them in closed session and give authority to the general manager beforehand, before any of the contracts could be signed anyway. And that's normally how these would be brought to your attention. Somebody wants to donate a certain amount of land or open space to the district, and that allows us to discuss it in closed session, and then you would be able to approve the entire transaction. Nothing prohibits you next month to change this ordinance if you choose that it's too broad and gives Tammy too much authority. But the reason, as I stated before, that it's created this way is so we can finish these transactions in this time frame.
Why don't we just why give an open-ended? I know Tammy would act ethically. That's not my concern.
Mm-hmm. Let me offer a suggestion. I understand the concern you're expressing, Director Funky Ballou. We do have these transactions that are of significant benefit to the community that have to be consummated. What if we adopt this ordinance today and simply direct the district council to bring back an amendment at the June meeting that would address your concerns?
Sure.
The concept here is one that I think we want to keep on the books. It's just the process by which these transactions get approved that you're concerned about, I think.
Right. I don't want some unethical, power-crazed GM to take the initiative you know, using greed to
understood.
You know, and we can easily draft a couple sentences to ensure that that doesn't happen.
Sure.
Well, my tired and feeble mind tried to do that just now, and I'm going to offer a suggestion. Doesn't mean that we couldn't come back in a month and change whatever we want. But what I'm suggesting, if you look at the ordinance, is it remains at the beginning the same, notwithstanding any other provision of this section. The general manager, and this is where I'm adding something, with prior approval of the board in closed or open session, may enter into contracts. And if we add that, then we've already received prior approval in closed session, then I think you'll have prior approval.
Art, you may be tired, but boy, you are sharp.
He's right on today. He's on his game. Is that acceptable to you, Director Funky Ballou?
Totally.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Director Jaldica.
I'm concerned that the, you know, the conditions such as
There's a significant number of other units that could be built on that site with enough water in the future, and we do save that forever by approving this particular project.
Conceptually, it's similar to the Behringer transaction in that regard.
That's correct, and I forgot I don't know if we ever had an estimate on how many more that theoretically could be built, but I knew it was close to 100 without this restriction.
Yeah, I feel this is for the public good. I think it's an excellent proposal. Thank you.
Any other questions of the district council? Is there a motion to approve this item?
I'll move to adopt ordinance number 0420. Excuse me. Move to adopt ordinance number 04-2005 as modified, amending chapter 8.04 of the Cambry Community Services District, authorizing the general manager to enter into contracts for the transfer of existing water commitments to meet the district goals of reducing water demand, providing open space, retiring buildable lots, and facilitating the development of affordable housing. And the as modified is the language that Mr. Montandon read into the record, that the pre-authorization of the board in open or closed sessions.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing no opposition, the motion carries. The ordinance is adopted. Item 10E is a status report on Veterans Memorial Building rules and regulations. And there's a staff report.
As it was approached to us and contracted with us to be the same type of event that the person who was renting the hall alleged it was. Therefore, it was there was possibility of damage to the facility, maybe some crowd control issues. Anyway, the event went away, but at that time, because we didn't have any procedures or plans in place with regard to our rules and regulations and our processes, the board directed us to put all private uses or rentals on hold, and that's what we've done, unless the party had a previous history with us or had a previous rental with us so that we had some sort of assurance or, you know, some history with them that there would be no destruction or no problems at the Vets Hall. There are some ideas, however. The Vets Hall rental from private parties, we have regular users who use it every day. And then most of all the rentals here at the Vets Hall, if they're not involving some sort of government meeting, they involve some nonprofit group. So they basically do not pay a fee. There's no rental fee. But we have long established relationships with these types of groups. The private users, however, it's different in dealing with them. And what I've offered as an option here is that we can just resume our normal operating procedures, which is to rent to private users. They have to provide us with the requested or required liability insurance. And there's right now no procedures here in place if there is an event that may involve serving of alcoholic beverages that may get out of control. We made a few phone calls in the limited time that we had, and there are local communities that have policies and procedures that require uniformed, off-duty law enforcement officers at events such as those contacted. So I gave some options or some ideas in order to allow an opportunity for private users to come back. I'm sorry that I didn't have an opportunity to be able to find out exactly how much income a private users result or, you know, or bring about for the district. It's not much, let's just put it that way. The routine groups that are here, the exercise groups, the users, you know, we get their fees. They're extremely good tenants. They're extremely good users that are here on a daily basis. The other ones that have either private wedding reception parties or quinceañeras or other things like that, I don't know how much that group represents to the income stream for the district. I know, though, that it is minimal. The district staff has somewhat enjoyed... Not that we are trying to insult or be derogatory about not having private events at the Vets Hall. It does involve extra work for us, however. We have that checklist at the back of the package that we gave you that we typically have to, well, we don't typically. We go through with every single private tenant that uses the hall who's never been here before. And then there's a follow-up walkthrough that happens after the event or somewhere close there, too. If there's any type of mess left after events, which has occurred, and I did report to you in the staff report that there have been several private events that have involved cleanup events by our staff, then we have security deposits on file that allow us the opportunity to collect those amounts. We have an established rate for cleanup, and it takes our staff away from other activities in order to do those things. So it's actually been a lot easier to manage the facility this past year without having those events for the limited amount of income that it does bring in. However, the options I offer and looked, and then there may be other ideas that I haven't even considered or staff hasn't looked at that I look to you for directions. I do expect that there will be requests for waivers if we implement either one of those that require law enforcement officer presence. There'll be the public groups. There'll be some contract groups like the American Legion and Lions Club that we have annual agreements with, and they do have events that potentially could fall into those categories. And so we need to consider that as an issue. And then the only other issue that's been brought forward to me as an issue this past year is smoking. And it's been smoking not necessarily in the vets hall, but out in the parking lot and outside events. And I've had a couple of people call me and they found it offensive. And I think we need to beef up our language and our rules if that's the desire of the board, to protect those people and their interests from outdoor events, that there is no smoking allowed on the premises if it be the desire of the board. And that's all.
Thank you, Tammy. Before we get to questions of the staff, one housekeeping item. Conference call that had been scheduled for 2:30 this afternoon has been postponed until tomorrow, so we can continue on and finish off the agenda without taking a break. Any questions of the general manager on her report?
Yes.
Director Chalvicott.
Yeah, I'd like just to clarify, these are events where alcohol is available. Is that primarily the problem?
Correct. I may have mentioned, or maybe I thought about it and didn't put it in here, that there could be some manipulation with that. Understand right. that when someone rents the hall and says there's not going to be any alcohol present, because it does require a different type of insurance liability mm-hmm. policy, there's no one here that they have indeed contracted to have those services at their event.
I'm just concerned that a guy may show up with a uniform on, and we have no idea. He may just be a...
I think once we find out through more research yeah. about how the other communities do it, there must be a procedure mm-hmm. or a plan in mm-hmm. place that makes that easy to verify.
Okay.
Director Funky Balloon.
Yes. I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. People have complained that there are other people smoking outdoors?
In the parking lot, at events that are sponsored in the parking lot or at the barbecue pit. And that it is on district property and we don't allow smoking. It is a public facility, and therefore they should comply with the no smoking regulations.
And we have an ordinance that says no smoking on district property, even if it's outdoors?
It's not clear that outdoors counts. In my opinion, I have not had an opportunity to review it with our district council.
Boy, I will never, ever agree to that. I'm telling you that right now. So, you know, this beefing stuff. I mean, every once in a while I do enjoy a cigar. But I do notice people who barbecue like to have stogies in their mouth or cigarettes or something. And, boy, smoking, barbecuing. I mean, how can you separate the two? That just kills me.
I'm just bringing forth your constituents' concerns.
But what's the state law on smoking and
art? I have to defer to you on that.
I bet there's more toxic chemicals emitting from a barbecue pit than from a cigarette from anybody's mouth. It's not even the same ballpark.
Let's hear from the district council on that.
Well, years ago, it was based on Cal OSHA laws, which means to have them apply, you would have to have an employee working in the place. That's why you can go into certain places and people will be smoking, because it's an owner-run operation. They don't have employees, and the Cal OSHA law doesn't apply. So the state law basically doesn't allow smoking in areas where there are employees, such as most restaurants and businesses within Cambria. If there is a working area outside, those laws, too, I believe, still apply. We don't normally have that situation when we have fundraisers and things here. We can regulate activities on our own property, and we can prohibit smoking if we choose to have a rule that does that. It wouldn't be an ordinance. It would be a rule like any other rule for use of our facilities.
Any other questions of the staff? I have one request to speak from Jerry McKinnon.
Just let me, before Jerry gets up here, this thing with barring smoking at barbecues, I mean, it just kills me. There are times when just simple courtesy and decorum can do a lot more than stupid rules that impact people's good times at functions. But anyway.
Jerry McKinnon, Cambria.
Welcome.
Mr. Ballou, you'll have fun with this. I heard on the Rush Limbaugh show this morning that a federal judge in New York has declared that a person has no constitutional right to use tobacco. Live with that one. No constitutional right to use tobacco. Are in effect now on using the hall.
Yeah, it's part of our ordinance that I attached.
Section 14, B and C, all relates to smoking. I would suggest that before you do any modifications, you decide what's going on now and adjust accordingly. But that's not why I'm here. I'm here because in the distant past, nonprofit local organizations using the hall for youth activities, like the Boy Scouts, and the schools, and other organizations, or an organization raising money for a charitable activity, were not charged rents. Now, since that time, the CCSD has broadened its financial responsibilities by increasing its staff and land holdings and increasing wage and benefits for employees not within the enterprise zones, and expanding the district floor space. Now, the money has to come from someplace. And it appears as though one of the places the money is coming from is from the rent on the vets hall, if you consider what the record was in the past. Now, unfortunately for the citizens of Cambria, you are attempting to raise some money by cutting charitable monies of the many charitable organizations in Cambria. Please, charitable activities and to the youth of our community. Please, please, pay less attention to what other communities do with their buildings. And remember that we are Cambria, we're a unique community, and we are dedicated to taking care of our own. Reconsider, please, free rent to charitable organizations or an activity such as raising money for a family that has become destitute because of cancer treatments, those kinds of things. We used to do it, but because we have a few more water meters now, we have to charge these rates of rent to people who need the money. Thank you.
Jerry, just a clarification, and I'm not expressing an opinion on your suggestion, only to say that the purpose of the charges levied for use of the hall is not to raise revenue. It's a money loser for the district. The cost to maintain this building, the cost to put in the fire sprinklers and so forth, far outweighs whatever little revenue the district gets. But it's something that helps us to maintain this building.
And to allow other charities to also use the building.
I understand that. But look at it from a table with a chair on the other side.
We will.
We need the money to support this particular charitable activity. And we have to give you $250? Well, that too.
Thank you, Jerry.
Just to echo what Mr. McKinnon's saying, because I sign off personally and approve every single request for fee waiver at the district. They're very simple. We have a very nice process in place. Regina, staff, and I work very hard. I have to tell you, I'm only aware of one personal request that came in that was more personal than a nonprofit organization, and it was a young person who had lung cancer, as I recall. It was a very, and I approved it. It's been very rare for any of the not-for-profits or any of the local groups or any of the child or the youth activity groups, that they're not, those fees are not waived. The only events that were ever charged were for private parties. That's it. And we haven't been doing them for the last year, so we haven't been charging anybody, basically, for use of the hall.
Yeah. So, just to underscore, there is a process in place for rental charges to be waived.
Absolutely.
Right.
And everybody comply. Most groups comply with it. Very simple.
Can I clarify, Mr. President?
Please.
So, in other words, if I was a nonprofit, not only can I get the room free, I get the janitorial service thrown in.
No.
Okay.
We don't clean up after the groups. Groups are excellent here. All the nonprofits and agencies, once we explain what our process is, they pick up, they clean up, and they leave the hall just as they found it. Those are our rules.
Then if I may reflect on what the old policy was, it was number 17, section C, that had it written out as to which groups were not, it will not be in this one. It was prior to 1994. Private, that you're taking care of yourself, let the public know that it's available. Maybe you haven't been approached because they didn't know it could be done.
I'm happy to report on who those groups are.
Thank you, Jerry.
That there's several groups that, to be honest with you, extend off of other groups, like the Lions and the American Legion. There are other and I just try to make it simple. I have to be frank with you. I try to make it easy. Our staff does by having things faxed and make it very convenient. I like the process we have in place as far as the letters are concerned for waiver, just because it keeps us protected with proper documentation that it is a legitimate nonprofit use or youth activity use, and it's signed and it's up to date. So it's not something that we allow to go stagnant, not by any fault of our own, but just getting busy with other activities.
Any other questions of the general manager? Director Coben.
One is, I'm sure that I think there's some, I don't know if you call them deed restrictions or something, that came with the building, that there were some organizations or some activities that were not to be charged. That, for instance, the building is dedicated to youth, and so youth have always been allowed to use the facility free.
We have a couple of contracts per year. I'll let Art, if he has any information recalling that, and then we comply with this ordinance that's in place today.
And then, I don't know of any specific deed restrictions. That's always been the intent and the way the building's been used.
I know Betty Fiscalini mentions that to me very often, that that was their intent, and I don't know if it was in writing or how they did it, but they expected this building to be dedicated to youth activities.
And that expectation is being fulfilled.
Yes, I understand that. I just didn't know where it was written. The other comment I'd like to make, I remember the incident when we...
Falls after that incident, and there are restrictions placed upon us as to us being discretionary about who we pick among private users to use our facility, a public facility.
Well, so I'm saying I'd just soon have no private users if it lets us open to that again.
Okay. Thank you.
Art, is there anything you wanted to add to that discussion? Okay. Well, I think the general manager is looking for some direction in order to bring back a revised set of rules and regulations governing the use of this building. Do the board members have any suggestions? Okay. You've heard from Joan, and that's a policy issue that I think we're going to have to address.
So I can give that as an option next month.
We have Director Funky Blue's
smoking
desire
around the
to smoke cigars in the parking lot. So we have to that'll be a policy issue that we're going to have to address. And I think we need to consider the comments of Jerry McKinnon and determine whether we want to specifically quantify those activities that are going to be exempt from charges.
And I can have that prepared in the report next month.
Mr. President.
Director Chaldicott.
Reading along on 14E, there are also violations for no smoking. $50 for the first violation, $100 for the second, and $250 for additional.
But no one is here to enforce them.
Pretty expensive cigar.
I'm ready to start making money.
I just want to make clear, people shouldn't be smoking. Don't get me wrong, but... At the same time, there are people who do smoke, and life is short, and the pleasures are minimal, especially when you get older. And there's got to be a balance between the
And so life is short, but it becomes shorter if we smoke.
The issue will be coming back to the board for policy consideration. Any other questions or comments?
I think one thing that we should realize is the reason it becomes a problem is the smoking is that it's usually someone who's smoking, for example, out here undercover, say the barbecue, and the smoke actually comes into the building, and the ventilation isn't that good. And that's really the problem. If someone was 50 feet away and it wasn't under closed session, no one would be worried about it.
Well, again, we'll be considering this as a policy issue when this comes back to the board. That concludes the regular calendar. It's now time for public comment. I have no request to speak. Is there anybody in the audience who did not fill out a request to speak who would like to speak at this time? Hearing none, we are adjourned to closed session.